seen this huge decline in the growth rate of halibut, 50% slower than they were a decade ago.
Taking a closer look at the upcoming commercial halibut season, and a former high school coach in the region could face prison time. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more up next. A former Juno Douglas High School basketball coach may spend as much as 9 years in prison. 63-year-old James Hamey changed his mind about going to trial and instead pled guilty Thursday to a reduced charge of second-degree sexual assault in the latest case against him. He was previously indicted in two more serious charges in connection with the July 2009 assault of a woman. A jury in October convicted Hamey in a separate case. A different woman said that Hamey stopped by her home uninvited and assaulted her. Hamey was a driver for a caravan, a transportation service for seniors and the disabled that's run by Catholic Community Services in Juneau. The woman was a regular client of the service. The proposed 9 years in prison covers both cases and was the result of a sentence and plea agreement made with prosecutors. For the most recent case, it includes aggravating factors for domestic violence and the worst type of sexual assault. Hamey said little during Thursday's hearing except for answering routine questions from Superior Court Judge William Carey.
With respect to the amended charge of sexual assault in the second degree, how do you plead, sir?
Guilty.
All right. Well, I will find a knowing and voluntary plea has been entered, and I will enter a judgment of conviction.
Hamey's sentencing is scheduled for May 23rd. Hamey's change of plea hearing Thursday was sparsely attended. None of his immediate family members were present, but the victim in the first case and a rector from Hamey's church were present. Hamey was a former teacher who coached the Juno Douglas High School boys basketball team for 22 years. He also was coach of the girls team for 8 years. 8 years ago, Hamey also pled guilty to theft for swiping $1,000 in proceeds from a student fundraiser. Hamey had tried to embarrass the school administration because he felt that they were pushing him out. He was stung by the preference given to his assistant for his coaching job. She was still a teacher, and he had already retired from teaching. Hamey was ordered to do 150 hours of community work service and undergo counseling. Steve Seeley, owner of Pacific Log and Lumber in Ketchikan, has resigned from the board of the Alaska Forest Association. Seeley says he sent a letter of resignation to the board late last year. He told the industry group he had given up trying for the timber supply he needed to reopen the mill.
Well, I think if you're going to be a board member and participate, you've got to be in there with new ideas, and you know, to not be productive takes up a space on the board. And this has been a long, tough battle, and we gave it the 3-year period of time that I felt was reasonable. There haven't been any changes to the good. I see nothing in the service sector. Part of the transition, I see very little happening in second growth. Old growth last year, the Forest Service, I think, sold about 19 million board foot of saw logs that would barely feed our mill by itself, let alone others in the areas.
3 years ago, Seeley sold off equipment for milling old growth to focus his efforts on processing second growth timber. He says the anticipated timber sales under the Forest Service's transition plan never came.
It's just become apparent that those efforts are bogged down. We haven't had a timber sale, a new sale in our area for many years. We lost the Orion timber sale, and I felt it was sweet. Again, it wasn't a quick or a hasty decision, but you can't operate a sawmill if you don't have fiber.
Pacific Log and Lumber was one of the last three medium-sized mills in southeast Alaska. One in Wrangell has closed and been dismantled. Another in Kluwak remains in the business, though it may face a timber shortage. Owen Graham of the Alaska Forest Association says though Seeley has stepped down from the board, he expects he will retain some involvement.
He has a number of other enterprises, and I know he's trying to keep some of his long-term crew working, and I hope the best for him. I know he intends to keep some kind of interest in the timber industry going forward, and I'm sure if we called on him for help, he'd show up and do his part.
Graham says Seeley could reemerge as a more specialized operation.
He talked about starting up another enterprise where he'd making firewood or doing some other projects with a smaller mill, maybe having a small mill to make custom-cut lumber for house building. I don't know. It seems like everything Steve tries to do, he makes work, so So I hope for the best for him.
Seeley says he's currently focusing on construction work and real estate development, among other ventures. He says he's still interested in reopening the mill if timber becomes available.
Any interest that we have will be in a smaller diameter log or a second growth type supply. I think there's a world of opportunity in fuel wood and manufacturing a small diameter log. But without fiber supply, you can't implement any plans.
He says he believes it'll be at least 2 years before enough timber is made available to reopen the mill, if at all. Seeley's been serving on the board of the Alaska Forest Association since 1988, not long before Haynes' last days in the timber industry. The last major commercial mill in Haynes closed in 1991. The news from the International Pacific Halibut Commission's annual meeting in Victoria, British Columbia last month was not good. Halibut stocks are low, the fish don't appear to be growing very fast, and there's no ready solution except to make deeper cuts in the commercial harvest and impose significant catch restrictions in the sport sector. Despite the steady downward trend in the commercial harvest recently, the commission in the last 2 years has not made cuts as large as recommended by their staff scientists. That practice ended this year, and the commission approved significant decreases for most fishing areas in the Gulf of Alaska. In part one of a two-part interview with Alaska's Longline Fishermen's Association director, Linda Benkin, and member Dan Falvey, KCAW's Robert Woolsey asked the pair to throw some light on the commission's process as it sets the quota for the year.
I would say the staff at this point of the commission is extremely uneasy about what's going on with halibut stocks, and they communicated that to the commissioners. In very strong terms. They'd actually called a retreat with the commissioners 6 months ago to discuss the status of the stocks and talk about abandoning their policy, which stair-stepped down on cuts instead of taking full drops from one year to the next when the data showed that stocks were declining. And they urged the commissioners at that time to consider taking, you know, bigger bites to drop quotas down more quickly. And so... there was that pressure already on the commissioners heading into the meeting. There was also scrutiny at the meeting by the State Department, who's initiating a performance review of the commission, and I'm sure having that oversight tends to heighten their sense of responsibility.
Do you share the commission's concern about the state of the stocks?
Well, to our evaluation of the stocks, they seem to, in 2C, to have stabilized at low levels, but they are at very low levels. Some of the indices of abundance, catch rates in the commercial fishery, say, have stabilized and seem to maybe even be slightly increasing. The catch rate in the survey was still down slightly from last year, 6%. And we've seen this huge decline in the growth rate of halibut, 50% slower than they were a decade ago. So the commission had kept projecting that we were turning the corner and we're, you know, all systems go for an increase in the next few years. And they're now saying maybe this growth rate isn't going to stop declining. And we better stop being quite so optimistic that we can continue to harvest at the same rates we used to harvest at until we see these little fish, this big biomass of little fish, actually grow up and get big enough to get caught in the longline fishery. So it's a mixed message, I guess. We're concerned. We felt the cut was huge, given the indices of abundance that we were looking at. Still concerned.
So I've heard two or three presentations from IPHC Director Bruce Lehman, and I know that the decline in stocks is coming at the same time that the Halibut Commission has changed its survey methods. Has this created some kind of perfect storm of bad coincidences for the commercial quota? Dan Falvey?
They did change the way they figure out quotas about 3 or 4 years ago. Before, they used to treat each area like its own separate closed checking account. And they would go out there, they'd survey it every year, they'd see how many new halibut moved into the area, they'd know how many died, they'd know how many were caught, and then they would come up with a new estimate of what that area could have for removals in the coming year. But they instituted a tagging program about 5 or 6 years ago, and that tagging program said that the areas are not self-contained units. They're actually migration between the units. And so that meant they couldn't treat each area like its own checkbook anymore, and they had to go to a coast-wide way of estimating the halibut abundance. And the commissioners have accepted the coast-wide method of estimating halibut abundance, but no one's really sure how to divide it up between the individual areas. And ways to do that have been discussed for the last 3 or 4 years. Most fisheries use a survey, and the abundance the survey sees within an area becomes that area's share of the overall catch limit. A lot of times those surveys aren't necessarily designed as apportionment tools, and so you add things like commercial effort, you average a series of years, you do things like that to make the survey a better tool for apportionment. And so that's what's been going on for the last 3 or 4 years, is trying to figure out how to make that survey a good tool for apportionment, which is one of the reasons the commissioners haven't necessarily gone with the full staff recommendations in the last couple of years, because no one's really sure that the survey really is capturing the way the halibut are distributed correctly. I think this year they did go off on they did agree to the survey-based apportionment because there were these other factors coming together that made them say, well, we really need to be conservative. And so let's take the survey as an apportionment tool and see how we can make it a better tool moving forward in the future, but we're not going to hold our breath for some other way to come along.
ALPA member Dan Falvey and Director Linda Benkin discussing the process used by the International Pacific Halibut Commission to set the commercial harvest. In part two of this interview tomorrow, Benkin and Falvey discuss how changes to the harvest rate will likely mean additional cuts to the quota next year, plus share their hope that the commission will adopt a more predictable and stable method of setting the quota. This is Tara Bicknell for KHNS News.